This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Capturing and sharing images has never been easier. From the streets of Tehran to Jerusalem, citizen and photojournalists give us a look at conflict zones the world over. But during America's Civil War, it took the work of a few intrepid photographers equipped with bulky cameras, tripods, and sheets of film to bring those images home. Among them, a Scotsman named Alexander Gardner. His work is the subject of a retrospective at the National Portrait Gallery. It's called Dark Fields of the Republic. Alexander Gardner photographs 1859 to 1872. And the exhibition was curated by the Portrait Gallery's senior historian, David Ward. David, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Oh, thanks a lot, Virginia. Really happy to be on and talking to you.
So a lot of people may not know the name Alexander Gardner, but what are some of the images that might ring a bell for us?
Well, that's actually one of the interesting things about the exhibition is that we know very little about Alexander Gardner, and he tends to be overshadowed during the Civil War by the big name, which is Matthew Brady. But we do know his pictures. We know his images of Lincoln. He was Lincoln's favorite photographer. He took multiple images of the president, well, even the president-elect in 1861 before Lincoln was inaugurated. He took major pictures of the Union generals. He was based in Washington, D.C., so there's an East Coast bias here. And then what he's really famous for and the real impact of his work was that he took the camera out of the studio and took it to the battlefields, and he photographed the aftermath of the battles of Antietam and then Gettysburg, 1862 and then in 1863, and created these indelible, harrowing, heartbreaking images of modern industrialized warfare, which really changed first just the discipline of photography, as you said in your introduction. But it also really just changes American culture. It's the way in which America comes of age and America becomes less innocent, less romantic, more realistic, more even cynical.
It is so stunning to see these photographs, you know, twisted, bloated bodies on the battlefield. We would never see these now. That's one thing. They're so affecting. Do you think the Civil War photographers that went out there knew that?
Yeah, I think that this was, well, first of all, I think the thing we have to keep in mind is that Gardner and Brady or Timothy O'Sullivan, they were commercial photographers. They had to make a living. They made a living by selling their images. They weren't fine art photographers. It was a commercial transaction. You could, as an ordinary citizen, go in and buy Gardner's Lincolns or buy his book, The Dead at Antietam. And I think there was an element of photography lends itself to realism, but the cameras becoming more and more mobile. It's more flexible. The cameras are becoming smaller, lighter, easier to use. And it comes out of nowhere. He's working for Matthew Brady in Washington. It's September 1862, and the Battle of Antietam, he takes his portable darkroom out to, you know, a wagon and loads it up and goes the 100-some miles out to Sharpsburg, Maryland, to the battlefield, and starts to take the pictures of the aftermath. I mean, it says something about how unprepared everyone was, that the battlefield was not cleared of debris and corpses and casualties and dead horses the 3, 4, 5 days after the battlefield. It was still just sort of smoking and festering. The New York Times said when they were displayed in Manhattan, these photographs have a terrible distinctness, that if they have not brought the war into our very houses and streets, they have done something very much like that. Ever since, we have been very careful and cautious in America, in particular, about what we show in terms of casualties, the element of either de facto or official censorship. In World War II, for instance, there was no depiction of American casualties until very late in the war. And this controversy about what you can show and not show, the sensational and frankly disturbing images of dead bodies, is something that we continue to debate and struggle over.
Well, you've opened up so many things, including, you know, who he was politically. He was a relative newcomer to the U.S., emigrated from Scotland in 1856. Was he neutral? Do you have any ideas?
Well, no, actually, we know a little bit about him. We know, for instance, that he was an abolitionist, that he was on the side of the Union, and he's very sympathetic to the cause. And I think that there was also probably a political impulse, although it's very hard to tease out, that by showing the horror of war, there would be an impulse that let's not do this again.
Well, you mentioned the review from the New York Times earlier. I'm wondering how people saw these images. This is before newspapers were able to print photographs. So did people see them, and what was their reaction?
First of all, they were widely seen, and they were seen in the galleries. They photography, you could reproduce them. They were even reproduced as etchings and lithographs in the newspapers, that a photograph would be turned into something you could print up. And I think, first of all, people were stunned. People are shocked. People had a romantic view of warfare. We had a romantic view of why people fought. There was very much a kind of framework of the novels of Sir Walter Scott and the romance of chivalry, and combat was somehow clean. And then when they see the scenes where you look at, say, Bloody Lane at Antietam, where it's a shallow road in the landscape, and it's just full of corpses. I mean, it's just full of them. They're just piled up. And people were shocked. It's one of the reasons I call the exhibition Dark Fields of the Republic. I wanted to suggest the gravity and the weight and the loss of innocence that Americans experienced, that this is a period of it's a heroic period, but it's also a period of great tragedy. The other thing that occurred to me halfway through doing this exhibition, that we need to remember the sensational appeal of photography as well. And even if this is uncomfortable to us, the way in which there's a kind of fascination with looking at the dead bodies at Antietam, this is something that nobody had ever seen before. Mm-hmm. And it's appealing to the senses in a way that I think, like we slow down to look at a car crash, or we turn on YouTube to look at the hanging of Saddam Hussein, there's an appeal here that we need to recognize and see it as part of human nature or a particular cultural moment, that they were sensational images, and people, however horrible they were in some ways thrilled by them.
We're talking about the Civil War photography of Alexander Gardner. His work is now the subject of a retrospective at the National Portrait Gallery. And we're speaking with the exhibition's curator and senior historian, David Ward. Well, I want to talk a little bit about that sensationalism, because there is a photograph that kind of demonstrates this blurry line between artist and photojournalist in a way. One of his photographs from Gettysburg, a very well-known one, Home of a Rebel Sharpshooter.
Right, yeah.
Now, for those unfamiliar with it, first, right, describe it for us.
First, I should just back off a little bit. 1862 in the Antietam pictures allow Gardner to set up his own shop in Washington. He breaks with Brady, sets up his own photography gallery, and then, of course, the competition is really on between him and Brady. But what he does at Gettysburg, which is really unconscionable, is in trying to find scenes that were appealing and marketable, he gilds the lily. I mean, he goes too far. He takes a corpse, a Confederate casualty, out of the burial line and moves it some 75 yards into this rocky part of Devil's Den, an area on the southern part of the battlefield. And he creates this four-photograph tableau about the so-called rebel sharpshooter. So there's Home of the Rebel Sharpshooter and the Rebel Sharpshooter's Last Sleep. And he creates this little playlet of the fate in these four photographs of the dead Confederate. And the whole thing is a fiction. The poor boy who was dead is not a sharpshooter. Gardner provides the rifle, which they had picked up after the battlefield. The rifles were picked up very quickly, unlike the corpses. So at the very moment in which photography is arguing that it creates an absolutely truthful picture of photography, which is something photography still argues for, Gardner completely destroys that by manipulating it, the truth, manipulating the story, creating a completely fictitious reality. It's really unconscionable, but it does raise issues that his career raises, which is at the beginning of photography, all these questions appear almost immediately, like what can you show and how far can you go in terms of manipulating the truth?
Well, Gardner was also the favored photographer of Abraham Lincoln. There's a famous photo that just weeks, I guess, before Lincoln's assassination, he looks weary. That it's distinguished by the crack. There's a crack that goes along the top of it. But to me, I look at this and I think, oh my God, he was a real person, you know, more less so in the portraits, but he takes pictures of Lincoln sitting there in a tent, you know, talking with someone, with other people. You know, this is someone we almost assume is in a costume. So it leads me to kind of ask the question of that kind of consciousness. Do you think that he was conscious that he was a witness to history? Was this all commercially motivated? He was just making money off of these photographs. Was he an artist, to your mind?
I think he did see himself as an artist, and he definitely knew that he was a witness to history. From the commemoration of people who may even not be known, but who were prominent at the time through the Lincoln photographs, through the photographs of the Lincoln conspirators, Booth, and when he moves west, taking pictures of the Great Plains Indians. The crack plate Lincoln, which is what you allude to, which was taken in early February 1865, is interesting because it is a complete accident. Gardner, there was no film. It was a glass plate negative, which had to be elaborately prepared. And by the way, one of the reasons why Gardner is so great, he was very skillful at the preparation of the plate and then the preparation of the solution that would allow the image in the plate to be transferred to paper. But it was a very complicated process. And at some point during that sitting, the plate cracked, probably while he was heating it, and he pulled one print of Lincoln and said, well, that's not any good, and threw the glass plate away. So the portrait gallery owns the only crack plate image of Lincoln, and it has this ghostly image where Lincoln is both present to us in all his worn and careworn and etched space. I mean, he's exhausted at this point at the end of the first term. But the other thing is that we know that he's going to die. We know, looking backwards, that he has about 6 weeks to live. And so this is the collision between February 1865, where Lincoln has all these plans of ending the war, freedom and the vote for black men, ending slavery, the whole thing, the package. And none of it's going to happen. And there's this, us looking back, there's this sense of inevitability in which Lincoln is now transferred from being an historical subject of an actual human being into a mythological figure.
David Ward, do you have a favorite Gardner image?
Actually, I do. I mean, the crack plate is a great image, but the image I like of Lincoln, it's the November 8th, 1863 image of Lincoln that was taken just before the Gettysburg Address, and it's a full-face view of Lincoln, which was a little bit unusual. Gardner usually posed Lincoln slightly in profile or at a slant, and it's right before the Gettysburg Address, and I am convinced that Lincoln had that picture taken in Gardner's studio on 7th Street, just around the corner from the Portrait Gallery today. And he saw the pictures of that Gardner had taken of Gettysburg and the casualties in the studio while he was sitting and, you know, and they were fussing around taking the pictures. And I think that looking at those photographs from Gettysburg influenced the way that Lincoln constructed the Gettysburg Address. That he didn't visit the actual battlefield in July, of course, but he saw secondhand Gardner's images of the corpses and the destruction and the blasted equipment and horses and the landscape all torn up. And that's where Lincoln begins to think about the great phrase at the Gettysburg Address that nothing we do or say here can consecrate this ground any more than those who have died here have already consecrated it. And so it's for us, the living, and to dedicate ourselves to a new birth of freedom. In other words, this sacrifice that's portrayed by Gardner leads to the notion that the war had to be fought for higher stakes, that it had to be fought for freedom, not just for the Union. And so that portrait, which is a tremendously dramatic image of Lincoln, connects with the battlefield pictures and connects with the whole history of the war, and I think it's unbelievable.
Well, David Ward, what a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you very much for your time.
Sure. Thanks a lot. Really appreciate it. I hope your listeners do, too.
Me, too. David Ward is the senior historian at the National Portrait Gallery, which is showing Dark Fields of the Republic, Alexander Gardner photographs from 1859 to 1872. You can get a little preview by looking at some of the photographs online. There's a link at wordofmouthradio.org.